Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us for our second quarter 2010 results conference call. With me in the room today is our Chief Operating Officer, Scott Robinson, our CFO, Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Land, Glenn Booth, and our Investor Awareness Rep, Jim Grant. Jim, I see you have a bunch of questions there, so I'll turn the call over to you.
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, for the third quarter in a row now, we are reporting a solid production increase, and in three quarters brought our production levels back to where they were when we reined in our capital spending in 2006, yet these three quarters, we spent half the capital, less than half the capital spending we had in 2006 to make this possible. What's different today?
Well, Jim, I think one of the things that's different today is that the gas price is half of what it was back then, or close to half, so it's probably a good thing we're only spending half the capital. I think what's happened is that today, as compared to, say, 2006, we're using new techniques, new technologies today to develop exactly the same type of resources and reservoirs with much less capital. So it's the capital efficiencies that are better today for the amount of reserves that we're developing. And, you know, since Peyto is a low-cost producer, we still have the advantage of generating the greater profit on that capital that we're investing. So I guess, you know, what is new is the technology, what's the same is the resources, the reservoirs, and the low-cost advantage that we bring to the industry.
Okay. Darren, before we look at the future, can you talk about the position where we stand today? How solid are our foundations as we go forward?
Jim, I think our foundation is more solid today than it's ever been. You know, just look at the bricks that make up our foundation, if you will. Our reserve life is the longest in the industry, and in fact, it's the longest in the history of the company at 29 years for proved plus probable. Our total cash costs are some of the lowest in the North America, and they've been trending lower over the last several years on a per unit basis. Our debt as a percentage of our producing asset value is around that 25% level, and you know, that's been a consistent level over the entire 11-year history of the company. The returns that we're generating on our capital program continue to be, you know, some of the highest in the industry, so we have some of the best opportunities. Our tax pool base is larger than ever, and it's growing this year with this year's larger capital program. You know, and lastly, our inventory of opportunities has just exploded here with the application of some innovative techniques for exploiting this resource that we're developing. So, you know, I'd say in spite of the fact that we've got weak natural gas prices and this sort of recent recession that we're coming through, we have a more solid foundation today than ever before.
Well, I want to address a few questions to Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. Scott, as we continue to develop and explore with horizontal wells, we're adding formations that we had previously not tried horizontal drilling on. Which formations that we have experience with verticals on have we evaluated horizontal drilling on to date? And which are coming up in the second half of 2010?
Jim, you know, as we detailed in our news release, to date we've drilled 21 wells, just to kind of recount where we are. 21 gross wells, 8 in the Cardium. Cardium still is a focus formation for us, and those are working out nicely. 5 in the very prolific, not a key one, and those two are working out very well. And 8 in the Spirit River, the majority of those in the Wilrich zone within the Spirit River. Recently, we drilled one in the Flair Sand and are just finishing up the completion of that well here. As we look to the balance of the year, we expect to drill maybe another 25 or 30 horizontals, largely in these same formations, but we also intend to test the Cadman Zone, which is another of our historically vertically developed zones. So we're looking forward to more of the same. We will look perhaps to our northern areas as well to extend some of our horizontal development in the Cardium, where we have good stakes, good land positions within the Cardium. So that's kind of a look for what lies ahead for the balance of this year.
So, Scott, with 5 rigs running since breakup. Are we being challenged for resources to manage this activity level, either within Peyto or from the drilling companies we hire? How does this compare to our previous experience when running five or more rigs a few years ago?
Well, I'll address that in two parts. Your first part internally within our own organization. While this activity level is quite high, we do have a very talented and dedicated staff, and they've embraced this challenge, and they're managing it very well. I don't anticipate any significant adjustments to our staffing level. I think we're handling it nicely. We're working hard and getting the work done efficiently and effectively. Externally, we've organized ourselves in conjunction with some very competent and reliable service providers, and haven't run into any issues in conducting the work associated with the five rigs that we have running. We've developed strategies and plans to help streamline and expedite a lot of the activities associated with the right through from the spud to the on-stream with these new horizontals. And our service providers are a large part of that, and you know, they continue to come in. The costs that we're getting from them are more or less flat over the last year or so. You know, things are looking good in that respect. So overall, no, I don't think we're being overly challenged resource-wise with regard to our activity level.
Okay. And in terms of other challenges, has the rain, thunderstorms, and flooding that we've been seeing in Alberta this spring and summer impacting our operations?
Not to any substantial degree. We have the odd delay here or there on a rig move or on a commencement of a fracture stimulation activity. But actually, when you think about it, the horizontal drilling that we're conducting is less prone to delays because of that. We'll set up and drill a well for a month, whereas that same rig might have been required to drill three verticals or two and a half verticals over that same time and would have been subject to two or three rig moves and therefore vulnerable to weather. Similarly, we'll set up and conduct anywhere from 5 to 10 fracks on a well over the course of 1 or 2 days, whereas under the vertical world, that might have been 5 or 6 independent operations, again, vulnerable or prone to weather delays. So although we have had some wet weather, it hasn't really impacted the conduct of our capital program, and it hasn't had much impact on our production operations either.
Okay. Now I'd like to direct a question to our Chief Financial Officer, Kathy Turgeon. Kathy, royalties and the various credits offered to encourage deep drilling for natural gas have made it hard to predict royalties. Can you break down the basic royalties and how the different credits affect that number in the second quarter? As well, our royalty rates are up over the second quarter last year and the first half last year against the first half of this year. Is that expected to continue?
Well, Jim, our royalty rates are up over Q2 of 2009 and the first half of 2009. This is due to a one-time adjustment to the gas cost allowance that we received from the Alberta government. Alberta Energy changed the way that they calculate the unit operating costs they pay us, which is for us to process their share of the production. Formerly, this was calculated using an average provincial rate. Now it's calculated using planned actual operating costs as we file them in the year following the production. So early 2010 was filed for 2009. As Peyto is a low-cost operator, this led to a negative adjustment to the estimated amounts that we had already been paid for 2009. As the Crown is now using our actual operating costs on a go-forward basis, we don't really expect to see significant changes to this. This was a one-time item. In addition, royalty rates are impacted by the 5% initial rate that we get on all our new wells since April 1, 2009. These wells are subject to this rate for the first year of production or until a volume cap is reached. Some of our wells are reaching the end of the production, which would mean that they won't be eligible for the 5% under that program. However, they do then become eligible for the natural gas deep drilling program, which will continue the time frame on that they're subject to the 5% royalty rate. We've also earned a large amount of drilling royalty credits. However, this reduces the capital cost associated with the wells and does not impact the royalties that we pay. Since the inception of the program, we've received and accrued about $20 million, which has reduced our PP&E.
Mm-hmm. Also, Kathy, we're well on our way to convert our reporting from Canadian generally accepted accounting practices to the international financial reporting standards. When will this be reflected in the presentation of our results, and what changes, if any, will our investors and analysts want to note?
Well, this comes into effect January 1, 2011, so we will be presenting all of our interim and audited financial statements from that point on in IFRS. We will also restate our 2010 comparatives and present them in IFRS as of that date. So over the course of the next 5 months, as we finalize our accounting policies for IFRS, we'll be including more information on the impact on the conversion on our opening January 1, 2010 balance sheet and on the quarterly 2010 interim statements. Right now, we've identified that the areas of primary impact are non-cash items such as DD&A, ARO, future tax, and future stock-based compensation.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to direct a couple of questions now to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. Glenn, with our increased level of activity, how is our inventory of drilling prospects? How does it compare with this time last year?
Well, Jim, I'd say it's changed in several ways. The obvious way first is going to be the number of wells that we're going to drill with the increased capital program. But probably more importantly, it's the types of wells that we're drilling. Scott just alluded to the fact that we're drilling a fairly aggressive horizontal program. And in comparison to last year, it was more vertical wells. And this year we've got very few vertical wells, but mainly horizontal wells. The activity in the horizontal wells have been primarily in the Sundance, Nose Hill, Old Man, Wild Hay area. And that's targeted these three zones that Scott talked about in the Cretaceous. But right now we're unlocking the value, we think, an additional two zones in the Cretaceous. I believe from the success we're going to have in the Cardium at Sundance, that activity is going to translate into some winter drilling program in the Cardium horizontals up in Cathorn, Cutbank. So all in all, when you pull it together, it's really magnified the value that we've got in our lands, both in the number of wells we're going to drill and in the number of zones that we're going to see.
Okay. Glenn, a cornerstone of our philosophy is to be aware and ready when our opportunities are available to acquire land positions in our existing areas of interest, close to our infrastructure, in the area where we have the depth and breadth of knowledge of the geology and geophysics. How are we doing in 2010 at continuing to get the land where we've identified good prospective drilling locations?
Yeah, Jim, we continue to be opportunity-driven. Nothing's changed there. And, we really have to be opportunity-driven. I mean, this company really operates in one big core area. We don't have the luxury of a southeast Saskatchewan, northeast BC, southeast Alberta, even an enclave. So we've got to be smart and masters in what we do in that deep basin area. And coupled with that is the fact that it's very competitive. And so as much as we continue to be competitive, we're disciplined, we're patient, and the formula still stays the same. It's driven by the technology, then the economics, and then it's followed up in the proximity to our infrastructure. So nothing's really going to change there. I'd say for the first half of this year, we've been successful at land sales. We continue to do a number of small deals, and that will continue, I'm sure, for the remainder of this year. So we've got lots to do, and it's falling into place.
Good. So now, looking towards the future, Scott, we've seen significant quarter-over-quarter production growth starting last year and carrying through the first two quarters of this year. With our continued five-rig drilling program, can you give us some idea on the size and timing of the various facility projects and capacity increases that will allow us to continue the growth of our production volumes over the next two quarters?
Sure. We've got three main projects, key projects that are underway right now that should or will provide us with an additional 40 million cubic feet per day of takeaway capacity, or about 6,000 barrel oil equivalent per day. And those projects will take place over the next 2 months here. So they'll position us very well to bring on some additional volume. But the details on those three projects are that we have recently installed a fairly substantial second train of refrigeration at our Nose Hill plant. That project isn't quite complete, but the refrigeration part of it is. That serves as a platform to add about another 35 to 40 million of ultimate capacity. Now, at Nose Hill initially, we're going to stick in two compressors, which will give us another 20 million cubic feet a day of takeaway capacity initially that goes with that refrigeration expansion. So half of our expanded capacity will occur at Nose Hill. We've got a second project that we're a few weeks away from completion on, which is a large gas gathering expansion project to link one of our key growth areas to our wild hay plant, where we've got about 10 million or so of capacity available there. And thirdly, we're undertaking some compressor modifications at our old man plant that ultimately will add another 10 million. So those three projects will give us 40 million and position us for additional volumes above and beyond that, which will depend, of course, on our drilling success over the next several months.
Right. Scott, how much did the Old Man plant turnaround affect production in the second quarter, and for how long?
The impact wasn't very much as compared to most turnarounds that you hear about in industry. Most turnarounds are multiple-day events, as have ours been in the past. To the credit of our guys, we organized ourselves very well, and this year's turnaround at Old Man was reduced from 3 days to 16 hours. So we lost 16 hours of production, about 9,000 barrels over the quarter, which equates to about 100 barrels a day for the quarterly production. Now, part of that would have been regained through some flush after we started up, but that's the impact. It's not huge, and again, that's a credit to our people. We did have a second little turnaround at Wild Hay during the quarter as well, a 14-hour outage there that will only impact the quarter by less than 10 barrels a day on the average.
Okay. Darren, we currently have 5 rigs active in the field right now. Last year we had 3 at this time, and that was a step up from where things had been for a while. Yet in the first half of 2010, we only spent about a third of our capital budget for 2010. How much more active will we be in Q3 and Q4?
You know, Jim, you raise a good point. You know, we hadn't expanded our capital program until the end of Q1, and so first quarter spending and the first little bit before breakup really didn't reflect this larger capital program, this accelerated activity level. And in Q2, you know, we only get to be in the field about half of the quarter because of breakup. So, you know, came out of breakup with the 5 rigs running, and so that activity level with the associated completions, well site equipment, pipelines, the plant expansions that Scott was just talking about, you know, I think our spending in the third quarter will be probably close to double what it was in the second quarter, and maybe even very similar to the first half of the year, all in one quarter, and then the fourth quarter should be very similar to that. So when you think about it, we've really only spent, on a go-forward basis, we sort of spent a third of the capital program to this point, and we've still got two-thirds of it to spend at the end of the year. So, you know, if we spend 75 to 80 million in each of the third and fourth quarters, you add that to the 86 million that we spent in the first half, then you get to somewhere between, say, 235, 245 million for the year, which is exactly, you know, right in the middle of where our capital guidance was set at 2.25 to 250. So really, we're going to be very busy for the back half of the year. We're going to try and push a lot of activity into these last 6 months. So it's going to be exciting.
Okay. You know, we've stated in the press release that as part of the corporate conversion expected at the end of the year, that the conversion will be effected pursuant to a unit holder and court-approved plan of arrangement, and that there will be a unit holder's meeting with respect to the conversion on December 8th. Exactly what does that mean, and when can unit holders expect to receive some more details on the conversion?
What it means, Jim, is, you know, that the conversion will be, I think, very similar from the perspective of the unit holders to how the limited partnership restructuring that we did in 2007 went, and for that matter, similar even to how when we converted to a trust in 2003, how that occurred. An information circular is going to be mailed out to all unit holders describing all the steps in the conversion, likely sometime in November, and that'll give people plenty of time to read it before the unit holder meeting that's scheduled in December, on December 8th. Then we apply for a court approval, and then finally we have a vote. And just like the AGM, it won't be necessary for all the unit holders to attend the meeting in person. They'll be able to vote through proxy, through the electronic ballot. process. Very similar to how unitholders vote at the AGM. You know, a lot of this information will come out in the circular. It'll be a big document, but it'll be fairly well laid out and explanatory in how the whole conversion process is going to occur.
Okay, and Darren, the last year has been exciting for Peyto between our developments in horizontal drilling, further credits for development of deep gas wells, and the general changes in the economy. What do you see when you look ahead to 2011?
You know, Jim, I think 2011 is going to be, and right at the start of 2011, it's going to be a time of big change, right? There's a lot of things going to be different in 2011 than they are in 2010. Company structures are going to be much different. We're seeing a bunch of proposed changes on the Canadian and the U.S. Tax horizon as we get to the start of the year. Energy markets are constantly changing. The economy, we could see some big changes in the economy, hopefully for the positive. Hopefully we get some more traction and we get some stronger recovery coming out of the recession. You know, the thing that doesn't change, though, and I think it's the thing that lets all of us at Peyto sleep so well at night, is the success of our business strategy. Considering some of the volatility that we've had to deal with over the last several years between gas prices and tax regimes and the overall world economy, I mean, our business strategy has really stood up well to the ultimate test. And so, that's one of the things that isn't going to change around here at Peyto as we move into 2011. That and, the incredible team we have here at Peyto, really they're the ones that implement that strategy for the benefit of all of us unit holders. And, I can tell you they're very excited about the future here at Peyto and the potential that we have and the opportunities that are in front of us. And when our team is excited, that makes me excited, especially, about what we can build and what we can become in 2011 and beyond. We can grow Peyto to the whole nother level. So really, despite the, sort of seasonal soft gas prices that we have now and some of this corporate housekeeping that's going to occur at the end of the year, the future of Peyto looks exceptionally bright right now.
Thank you so much. We'll now take questions from the telephone line. Our first question is from Stephen Lockton of Greenwich Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
A couple questions. Out of the 25 or 30 wells you're drilling for the balance of the year, how many will be done in the Cardium?
Don't know exactly, and that the plans change somewhat, but I would expect about 10 of those are Cardium wells.
And do you have any sort of Kennedy thoughts about whether you might add a rig and what your drilling budget and activities going to look like in 2011?
Steve, I think there was some contemplation that we might need a sixth drilling rig actually when we were batting around some of the opportunities that we wanted to pursue late in this year even and as we go into 2011. Traditionally, we go about setting up our 2011 budgets and activity levels sort of October, November, get set up for the start of the new year. I think so far to date, we've been very encouraged with the results that we're seeing from the wells and from the program so far. And so obviously, we're taking a lot of that encouragement into the preparation of the next year's program. We're really looking at the program, saying to ourselves, okay, we're completely unlimited here in the amount of opportunity that we can do. Let's sort through all of our opportunities. Let's high grade it to those best locations that look most attractive to us today, the ones that look like they're going to generate the most return, and let's start building a program from that. So, a lot of our program gets built from the bottom up using the individual locations that we've identified to date. But, of course, part of the process also involves a look back. As we get to the end of the year, we get the annual reserve reports, and we get that profitability analysis that tells us, just how effective our capital program was. So all those things factor into our plan as we're building our 2011 plan this fall. And we should have some more guidance, I guess, for the 2011 capital program probably next quarter.
What's the time to drill on a typical Cardium well?
A Cardium horizontal, about 20 to 25 days. Just to add to Darren's comments there, the five rigs that we have running right now, if we were to run them over the course of a full year, we'd be over $300 million on our capital. So we are at an accelerated level of spending over the second half of this year. So.
You're only a little over 4 months away for the, until the new year. I can't conceive that you haven't been able to come up with a guesstimate of what a corporate tax rate is going to look like for 2011. Do you have one?
Well, we know what corporate tax rates are going to be.
For you.
At least the rates are going to be. And we know, or at least we have a bit of an estimate internally on where our pools are going to be. I mean, obviously, we're going to come out of the year with a huge bank of tax pools that have been generated over the last several years with our drilling activity. You know, really what we're looking for, I think, to give unit holders more guidance into 2011 is, you know, what are commodity prices going to do? And there's a few things on the horizon, too, with respect to tax situations for unit holders and investors. There's some U.S. Changes in the tax treatments of dividend income, for instance, that those are the types of things that we need to consider as we're setting our plan for 2011. They're still a bit unknown, and we're looking for some more certainty there. The last thing we want to do is come out with an indication of what we're going to do in 2011 and then have something surprise us, and we're going to have to make changes to that. We're still not even in 2011. So, you know, we want to make a very informed decision and set our dividend policy, for instance, based on all the information that's going to be relevant in 2011 and beyond with respect to our business. So
when will you be in a position to make a statement about the dividend policy?
I think, as I mentioned, we'll be in a much stronger position when we get to the Q3 release in November. You know, obviously, I recognize that is getting late in the year, but, you know, we're also going to be in a much more informed position at that time.
Would you be more likely to revert from a monthly to a quarterly kind of payment?
You know, I think most of the companies that have converted to date that used to be trusts paying monthly distributions haven't seen that it's an onerous thing to have monthly dividends. So, you know, when we look at that, the cost and the administration of monthly versus quarterly, I don't think that monthly is all that more onerous than quarterly. So, you know, I think monthly makes as much sense for dividends as it does for distributions.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
I have a question from Historic Degressi. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Congratulations on a great quarter. My question is regarding the financing that FIDO uses, that is the bank line. There was a bit of a scare, at least for me, last year during the height of the financial crisis, and I think it was reflected in the share prices as well. Has FIDO considered using some kind of a debenture structure which provides more security, for example, convertible debentures or unsecured debentures whereby, even as Darren mentioned earlier about sleeping well at night, if there was some type of a financial panic, we would be able to sleep even better. Thank you.
You know, Isidore, that's a great question. Obviously, the debt became a paramount concern for a lot of investors and a lot of the industry, too, last year when we went through that credit crisis. Credit got really tight. Banks got very nervous. You know, our bank line is it's a short-term revolver. We don't have any long-term debt necessarily that extends out beyond a couple of years. We don't have any fixed instruments or bonds or anything that has a much longer term to it. But at the same time, the borrowing base that is established for PAYDO is based on, you know, our real assets, our reserve assets, which have very high value, have very long life, and have very low cost. And so even when commodity prices dip, you know, generally speaking, our banking syndicate has a lot of confidence in the value of our assets, and so they're willing to lend on them. You know, I think one of the things we took away from the credit crisis last year was a renewed sense of confidence in that asset. The banks had to test our borrowing base and test the value of our assets at some extremely low commodity prices and at a time when they were very nervous about lending money. And they came away quite confident with our asset and, of course, obviously with the profitability of our business. We haven't looked at a lot of alternative structures. I mean, we have, but we haven't, you know, haven't been too interested in them. generally speaking, they're more expensive. Longer-term debt tends to have a higher interest rate associated with it, high-yield debt especially. Peyto's not quite to the ultimate size of company that can attract or issue a long-term bond that has a more attractive interest rate attached to it, especially from the cost of the corporation's capital's consideration. So, you know, convertible debentures are one method that others have been using lately. Pricing on convertibles has been much more attractive. You know, so it's obviously one that we looked at with maybe some more interest than we have in the past. But part of the reason that we're still a little shy about those is there's that conversion feature into equity, and it's at a future date when we don't know what our equity might be and what we might be trading at. And, you know, we've got obviously a lot of opportunity in front of us. We're very excited about our potential in the future, and the last thing we want to do is predict what our stock price is going to be as a result of some of that future. And, you know, I think we want to leave our future open to all the opportunities that we have. And that's where the convertible debenture, I think, worries us in many cases. And we saw last year, you know, good evidence of that, where companies were having to refinance their convertibles, and they were paying a significant penalty, in effect, for having to do it at the wrong time. It was very dilutive, or they were having to reprice at a high premium to what the typical market was offering. So, you know, that, as much as the short-term revolver, I guess, carries with it the risk associated with the shorter term and the unpredictability of debt markets, you know, we're very confident that we have a very high value asset base that supports that that amount of debt. And, you know, when I look at how much leverage we do carry on the value of our asset, it is quite low, relatively speaking, you know, at about 25% of the value of our producing asset base. That's not high as compared to the rest of the industry in Canada, and especially as compared to the North American industry.
Okay, thank you. I would also, I'm curious, with all the other companies, other trusts that are converting, no one, or I guess it's not technically possible, to come up with something creative for people that have the units in their registered account, be it RIFs or retirement savings plans. That is to say, whether there is a creative way for the company to give those holders an opportunity to swap units for, say, higher yield debt that the company pays, it becomes an expense of the company. I'm not sophisticated enough, but in essence, what I'm asking is some kind of a more efficient way to hold the units in an RSP where the dividends, you lose the dividend tax credit and you get fully taxed when you withdraw the monies.
It's a great question, Isidore, you know, and it's obviously a question that we've asked time and time again as well. We've kept our ears wide open to all of the other industry participants that are also asking that same question. You know, everybody's looking for the magic structure that works for every type of investor, that works for Canadian investors both in and outside of registered savings plans, that works for foreign investors both in and outside of pension programs and IRAs and the like. That, you know, we're looking for a structure that's flexible with respect to the proposed tax changes both north and south of the border. It's unfortunate because we're frustrated. I know you're frustrated. You know, we all wish that we could have sort of the trust structure back because it seemed like it worked so well from that perspective. But, you know, the best that the lawyers and the corporate industry is coming up with, I guess, is the tax specialists are coming up with is just a dividend-paying corporation. That's the most established, I guess, and known structure. But it's just, as you point out, not nearly as tax efficient. You know, you're getting after-tax money going into your RRSP. You don't get the credit of a dividend tax credit. You're paying full income levels when it comes out. It seems like the money is being taxed a lot more than it otherwise would be. And why is that the case? You know, and you're exactly right. I mean, There needs to be additional reform, I think, with respect to the rules. There needs to be some streamlining there because the inefficiencies are evident to everyone. There has been, you know, talk of structures that staple debt and equity together so that when you buy a share of Peyto, you get a note that pays some interest on that. So you get to participate in perhaps the upside of the equity and you still get an income product that's treated efficiently from a tax perspective. But even those are very rare for one. There's only a couple of companies that have even conceived of trying them. The federal government hasn't given any rulings on them yet. They're not prepared to give any opinions as to whether they're going to allow them. You know, it would be breaking brand new ground. And as much as, you know, we like to be innovators, at the same time, we're not going to take a huge gamble and, you know, we're not going to play chicken with Peyto here. We really have to, you know, be careful as we move forward and be flexible too. And quite frankly, you know, our corporate structure was where we were before and we were allowed to move from that into a trust structure. So it's not like, you know, we're converting to a corporate structure and we have to stay there forevermore. You know, we're back to where we were before and we're still as open-minded as ever if there's a more effective structure that's going to come down the pipes at a later date. Definitely we're going to look at it because if it's more efficient, why not?
Could you also comment on land prices? Like in light of the fact that, you know, natural gas prices are so low, the price to buy land has not come down to any noticeable degree?
Well, you know, again, this Deep Basin is really catered to a lot of different companies, a lot of different zones of interest. The price of oil is probably, especially in the Cardium, is really catered to some very increased prices in this Deep Basin. Unfortunately, we get punished with both of those things, the deep rights and the shallow Cardium oil, because we're doing everything else that's gas in different zones. But it's always been a hot area, probably always will be. It's very competitive. Every company in this town is in this area. So it's something you've really got to pay attention to and pick your spots. We managed to do that. We're kind of deal junkies, as I call us, and so in the alternative of not being able to go to a sale and buy it, there's a lot of people that have this acreage, have been sitting on it, and we just patiently wait to get the acreage that we want that they've got as these lands approach the end of their term. I think that strategy has proven to be very successful for us. One, in securing it, but two, in getting it at what I would consider to be very favorable terms. So, I mean, again, you've touched on something that we deal with day in and day out. It hasn't changed as much as we'd like it to, but we'll see what the future brings.
You know, Isidore, I'd add to that I think there's a big discrepancy now between land prices in the areas where, you know, big resource plays exist, where people think that they've got lower supply costs. They're obviously attracting the entire industry, the big shale plays, the Deep Basin. You know, if we went up into northeastern Alberta and were to post some conventional PNNG rights, I think they would be going for a song right now. You wouldn't be seeing any of the kind of pricing that we're seeing in either the Deep Basin or, you know, the northeast BC shale plays or any of that. So there's, you're right, there is a big difference between the prices that you're seeing on conventional versus the larger resource unconventional plays.
A final comment, I guess what I was getting at is, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but for example, if the cost of a typical well is approximately $5 million and the cost of a section of land is X million, and you felt with your expertise that you might be able to drill so many wells in one section of land, whether it makes sense to try to sort of just drill the one well on that section and try to build up land base that way. And when the commodity price rises, you're in a very good position that even if servicing and drilling of wells was to go up somewhat, you have a big cushion. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And that's a strategy that we deploy all the time. It's you know, we look at what we own today and what we could harvest of our own asset, and then we look at what we don't own and what we could get. And as much as we pick away at what we do own, we can't delay the development of it forever. We definitely don't just focus on what lands we have today. We focus on the entire basin and where the opportunities exist. And quite frankly, we should be and are focusing more of our time on opportunities that we don't own, because we've already secured the ones that we do own. So we do spend a good amount of time. A lot of our exploration and exploitation group, our land group, are very focused on what we don't own, those opportunities that we've been able to identify on other people's lands or on Crown lands. How do we get those? But I think, as Glenn was alluding to earlier, sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes you have to be very patient. And, you know, that's been, I think, a lot of the success at Peyto, is that we don't move around. We're very focused in one area. We've had a team working this area for a long time. We don't forget about those opportunities that we identified that maybe we weren't successful getting the land the first time around. But we wait. We put them on the shelf and we get back to them the next quarter or the next year. And we keep our attentions focused on those opportunities. And eventually we get them because, you know, whereas other companies, they tend to divert their focuses from gas to oil sands to international to the Marcellus Shale to all over the world, you know, they don't stay focused on the deep basin. We do, because that's the only area we look at. And so we don't miss those opportunities. When they forget about them and then they're prepared to give them up, we're there to pounce on them. So I think that's been a very key part of Peyto's business strategy, and it's definitely one that we haven't forgotten.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the questions, Isidore.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time.
All right. Well, I guess that's another quarter behind us. Thanks very much for everybody that listened in today, and hopefully everybody's having a great summer. You know, I think this second quarter, despite the interruption of breakup, was a very busy one, and you know, after listening to today, I think you've got a sense that we're only getting started on how busy we're going to be here for the next quarters, couple of quarters coming up. So it's going to be very hectic, very exciting at Peyto. So stay tuned. Our website will try and keep us up to date with our capital program and the results, and an up-to-date investor presentation for you. And we'll be back to you in November with the third quarter results. Thanks again for listening in.